I do greet each one of you in Jesus' name this evening. I suppose we can call it a sacrifice to come. I'm not sure what I sacrificed other than, dang, I won't get to hear Thomas Schrock preach at Tyrone tonight. I didn't drive any farther than I do some days for work, but it's a blessing to be here. Especially to see this new work, see people stepping out in faith, but even to come and to help ordain leaders in the church and take these steps. This week, Brother Steve Martin and I met in Altoona, and we had something on our minds. Exactly a month from today, we plan to head for Bangladesh, and we're going to visit two different congregations while we're over there, two different areas. And the one little congregation we organized in 2020, just a few weeks before the COVID belted the world, and we organized that church, and we actually ordained a man to be minister there. And that was not an overnight process. That was actually a process that the wheels were turning for well over a year, but all things are of God. COVID struck, the airplane stopped flying about 2 weeks after we were there, and it would go almost a year and a half before anybody got back to that village to get on the ground and see how the people are doing. And by then, the man that we ordained to be minister had turned out to be a heart-rending fraud. He took an honor upon himself that he should not have, and he began to be a wicked servant who would beat the fellow servants. Money disappeared out of the treasury. Still don't know where it got to. And about a year and three quarters later, we made the trip over there to sit with the men and to put that man out of the church and out of his office. And that little congregation has not had any leadership since. In simple English or Bangla, I don't know how you would say it, but in simple English, they're scared to try again. They're just not sure that having leaders is a good idea, because when they saw it firsthand, it just really looked like a big problem. One that nobody could solve until the Americans just came in and flattened everything. And they're not opposed to what we did. They just wonder if there's ever a right way to do it. And what's on Steve and I's mind is, we go visit them, we want to try again. Now, there's no way we're going to fly over there in an airplane and in a couple days we're going to leave with a deacon and a minister in place and life's going to go on. But what can we do to help them see that it is a scriptural thing to ordain elders in every city? The Bible says it, and it's really the way it needs to be. So it's just, I'm blessed to see you doing this. I mean, this is what you need to do. Is it uncomfortable? It usually is. Is it scary? Seems that way to everybody, from the bishop on up. But it's still the right way, and I'm glad I can be here to help do it. Open your Bibles to Revelation 17. The text I would like to use tonight, I don't know if I should apologize for it or not, because when I start reading the text, you're going to see that it is a prophecy, and I really don't want to present a prophecy sermon at a nomination service, and I'm not even going to try. But I was drawn to this passage because I was actually looking for a verse, and when I found this verse, it was not the one I was looking for, but it caught my attention, and I've been thinking about it for quite some time since then, and I find it intriguing that the text that I want to use tonight, I cannot even find a commentary that comments on it. It just is so insignificant to the people that write the big, thick books but it caught my attention, and I'll explain that after we read it. Revelation 17 is the story of the fall of Babylon the Great and the great war that goes on with the whore. And You know, it takes a lot of work, I think, sometimes to try and figure out, did it happen, will it happen, and when it does happen, how will it happen, and can we agree enough on that we can even talk about it? But let's just start reading at verse 10, and I want to read to verse 14, and then I'll show you what caught my attention. Revelation 17, verse 10, "And there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the other one is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seventh, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but power as kings 1 hour, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and their strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is King of kings, and he is Lord of lords, and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful." So you have this picture of a scene, and it is most commonly believed that this is an end time event, and there is this awesome build up and an awesome battle, war, that takes place. And the kings are, these kings are in the war, and they're together, and they are strong, and they war against the Lamb. And it doesn't take a lot of imagination to know who the Lamb is. It's Jesus. This is a spiritual warfare. Will it be played out in a visible sense? I guess we'll find out. Some say it will, some say it won't. I think we'll find out. When it happens, you will know that it's 10 kings against the Lamb. And I will too. And I don't think it happened yet. But the point that I want to dwell on is the fact that there is a Lamb that is leading a charge. And it almost seems like the 10 kings come against the Lamb, that they come looking for him. It could be the other way around, and it doesn't even matter. The clash is going to happen. But the Lamb is not alone. The verse says in verse 14 that the Lamb is going to overcome them, but there's going to be an entourage, a group with the Lamb, and they're going to be people. It's not going to be the people that are with the 10 kings. It's going to be the other people, the people that are with the Lamb. And the verse goes on to explain that the people that are with the Lamb have these three hallmarks or these three characteristics. They have these qualifications that you can see on them, in them. I'm not sure how it's visible. I don't know how you look at the soldiers of the army of the Lamb and see that they are. But it explains that these people are. And this verse caught my attention, that last line, that there's these people with the Lamb, the one that is overcoming, the one that is Lord of lords and King of kings, and there's this entourage, these attendants, these associates, these followers that are with him, and they are three things. They are called, they are chosen, and they are faithful. And you can know it. And I thought to myself, how would you know, just looking at an army, that the soldiers are? And this is where my imagination started to hit a gear that may not be healthy, but I just started letting my mind run. How would you, in an army world, in a military world, how would you know what the soldiers are? And the answer, I think, in a military sense, is that you would know what the soldiers are by the medals that they have pinned on their chest. I'm just guessing, but I'm thinking about it. It's a way, see, in we don't know much about the military world, but I know a little bit. And I know that as a man does in the armed forces, he is rewarded with things that you can pin on. And as soon as you see that man and you see what's pinned on, you know what he is. You know what he did. There's a purple heart there. There's an iron cross there. There's a silver star there. And I don't even know what they all mean. I've never studied into that. But I know that that is the meaning of the pins. The pins are to let everybody know on first glance, first stare, And they have these in the armed forces, they will have these review of the troops where the army will march down through and the spectators will look on, or they'll set them up on a platform and you will look down through and you will see three stars. Oh, he's a three-star general. And you will see the different little flags that are there. And you just know who they are by the pins that they carry. And I was thinking about that, and I thought about these followers of the Lamb that have these three medals, these three pins that are on them, and it says who they are. And the pins are, number one, called, number two, chosen, and number three, faithful. If you let your mind wonder about what it means to be called of God, what it means to be chosen of God, and what it means to be faithful of God, there's just a lot to think about. I'm not planning to have much of a qualification message tonight. For one thing, it's difficult to know what to say when there's two offices in focus. But number two, it is my personal belief that your work on your knees and your work of pondering of the heart and talking with your wife should be done by now. It's time to just think about, every one of us, start thinking about, what is my level of called, chosen, and faithful? And I just want to talk about these, and I'm going to talk about them just like they are medals. And maybe that's a bad allegory. Maybe that's going to give you the wrong impression. But it was a tangible way for me to process what these three elements are that are described in Revelation 17 as the characteristics of the Lamb's followers. I read one time, this is at least 15, 20 years ago, but it has always stuck with me, and it has helped me understand the Christian life. This man said that we need to understand that people are hopelessly pragmatic. And if you don't know what pragmatic means, just think practical or temporal. In other words, there's a reason why God, Jesus, in the church, has given us seven ordinances. We're too small-minded to hang on to these things on a spiritual sense without the earthly lessons, okay? We learn servanthood by getting down and splashing in the water and washing and wiping each other's feet. And Jesus knew that. The followers struggle to get it until they get wet, okay? Same thing with the communion table. Could you be a Christian? Could you be a follower? Could you remember Jesus without breaking that bread and drinking of that cup? Perhaps, but we'll never know. Because he who knew us best and made us said, here, take this bread and break it, and so you can remember me. And that's all I'm trying to do tonight. I'm taking these three spiritual characteristics or these spiritual qualities that are an essence of a relationship with God and a long-term army of the Lamb possession and say, here's some medals you can pin and you can see. Number one is we have this medal of called. Every soldier in the army of this Lamb has a medal that says called on it. Now, I wanted to say one thing yet about this before I got into the actual description or discussion of the medals, and that is that there's something about medals that I've learned, and that is you don't get them on eBay. It's not like I can, with enough of money, just go around and buy my way up the ladder. Medals only come to those who have done. In other words, when you see an officer and he has it there, you know it happened. That's the only way you can get there. It must happen first and then the medal comes. And you just want to remember that. Medals are neither gifted nor cheaply bought at Goodwill. They are the results. They're not even the results of luck. I suppose that in conflict, there are times when soldiers excelled at their battles, and there had to be some good fortune that came their way for it to work out the way it did. But that is, that's not, normally, when you see a medal, you think of a man that gave it all, and at great expense and hard effort, exhaustive effort, maybe a night or two or three in the deep, And then he was saved, rescued, and they gave him a medal for his work. That's the essence of medals. So, the medal of being called. This word called means invited, appointed, and Strong says it's a synonym for a saint. I looked at that for a while and shuffled around with dictionaries to try and figure out how we get from called to saint, but I know that there's a line in one of the epistles that begins that way, called to be saints. But it's a calling. The Bible Dictionary says that the word called means an invitation to a banquet. This medal is about the gospel. You see, the gospel is Jesus Christ crucified. He was buried. He arose. He ascended to the right hand of God. And now he is up there as an intercessor. But he prophesied in John, was it chapter 8? It's the book of John where he's talking one day. He says, and if I be lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. And what's interesting to me is that when you talk about the calling of Christ through the gospel call, which is what I think this is talking about, these soldiers of the Lamb have received the call. And when you talk about that, we are talking about something that is not at all selective. There's a sense in which this first medal could be the possession of every soul that it was ever born. Now, maybe that stretches your mind too big. But the more you read the New Testament gospel, you will find out that both God and Jesus Christ himself brought a gospel to this earth that was not only for whosoever will, it was also for everybody. And you can just walk through the scriptures in your mind. John 3:16 is the classic one. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever, okay, because it could be anybody. Jesus in Matthew 20 and in Matthew 22 would tell two parables. And the first one was about this man that had a vineyard, and then he went off on a journey, and he moved away, and he had men that worked for him, and he wanted them to keep the vineyard and to send him fruits from the vineyard. And they were rascals, and they would not do that. And he would send servants to see what's going on, and they would beat him and send him back. And one day, he sent his son, and they took the son, and they killed him. And then they said, well, what's going to happen to these people now? And the local people there, as he was telling the story, said, they're in for it. They're going to get it. Yeah, that's right. And then he said this. He said, I want to tell you something. This is about my kingdom, and many are called, but few are chosen. And what he meant by many is it was an uncountable number. It was an innumerable number. It was just many. And he wanted to have this idea. And then Matthew 22, he tells another parable, and he ends up the same way. He says, now listen, that one was about a wedding feast where people were being called in. And he said, many are called. And I don't know the number of people that are called, but I've come to the place in my own understanding that I'm fairly certain that it's easier to find a man who is called to the kingdom than a man who has never been. And I can't take credit for that. I just believe that when Peter added his 2 cents to it, he said in 2 Peter 3:9 that the Lord is not willing that any should perish, but that all would come to repentance. And this calling chosen and faithful, this calling has to be understood as one that is available. And I don't know how many of you have an actual acquaintance of somebody in your world or in your life experience that you know went to the grave without accepting Jesus. Most of us know somebody like that. Some of us have had some pretty close home experiences like that, where you stand at the casket and you look down at the departed, at the form and the souls departed, and you know that unless there is a secret that no one was ever told, that man never answered the call. And it's a weird feeling. It's a black feeling. And you wonder what you could have done for more. But the calling goes out. And by the end of every man's life, we got to know that he could have had this medal. You look at the masses in the world and you say, really? You ride the train from Joypahat down to Khulna, and you go through village after village after village after village after village after village, and it's just the train is trickling along, and there's thousands of people, and here the idols are where the Hindus bow down, and here are the temples where the Muslims are going, and you say, is the gospel here at all? It seems like it's not. But the only way that I can believe that it can't be there is to believe that God limits who may have a medal. And I haven't gotten to that point yet. But this is the call. And I think it's to be offered the gospel is the first of the medals. And I would suppose that there are people that have the first medal, but not the second and third, and they will not be part of the army of the land. Number two is the medal of chosen. Now, this word chosen can be a slippery slope because there's something that seems to happen between the gospel truth when written in Greek and translated into good old King James English that can set up a conflict for those of us who read it. Because the word chosen means elect. And it actually, if you take a Strong's Concordance, it will say the favorites. And then we read a verse like, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated, and it sets our Sunday schools on edge. We don't know what to do with them. We hammer and bang and crash on them. Who is this God that would be so bold as to tell the mother before the twins are born that one's going to be okay and the other one's going to be discarded? And then we wonder why the mom showed favoritism. And we struggle to understand all that. And it gets into this doctrine of the election that has been competitive for many years. But the meaning of chosen, the math only works for me if I look at it a specific way, and I'll try to explain what I think is going on here. The word does mean favorites, and God does have favorites in spite of his tremendous grace and in spite of his declaration. Brother Ernest came down and preached for us this morning, and he spent a little bit of time there in James 2, where God is not a respecter of person. He read it to us in English, and we understood what it said. But God has favorites, because Peter's going to say that the ears of the Lord are open. He's quoting out of Psalms. Now I'm getting it backwards. But it's so clear that there's two categories. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 12. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are ever opened unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And that comes out of Psalms, and it's just making it clear that when it comes to how God interacts, relates to people, he really does have favorites. And he's not a respecter of person, but he has favorites. And how do you put that into practical English that we can understand? Well, here's how it works, and that is that just like Peter said, that when a man begins to pray, and a man begins to cry out to the Lord, and he turns his face toward the Lord, he finds that the face of the Lord is toward him. And when he rejects the Lord and he walks the other direction, and like the stubborn little two-year-old that is told, don't do that, and he marches that direction anyway and does it anyway, that all impacts how your Heavenly Father looks at you. And he who bows his heart before the throne will become the child, the favorite child. The chosen. And this thing of elect is tied very, very, very deeply to the human's response to the first medal. Very tightly. He who obeys and he who trusts and he who follows receives of the mercies of the Lord. And David spends psalm after psalm explaining this. And what often happens when these conversations about elect and chosen and sovereignty and predestination get rolling is we remove the covenantal element that when God sent his only begotten Son into the world to be our Savior, and we accept, it counts for something. And predestination is awfully easy for a God who knows the end from the beginning. Did you know that? Do you know how easy it would be to decide which sales calls to go on if you always knew who's buying and who's just kicking the tires? I would predestinate my sales calls if I knew the end from the beginning. I would do it every time. It would save time, it would save money, it would save hassle, it would just save a lot of grief. If you knew the end from the beginning, you could predestinate. And that's where we get off the, we get so befuddled by God. We take away his power to live in the future as easy as the past while being in the present, and we say, I don't understand this predestination thing. Of course you don't, it's because you aren't God. But if you knew the end from the beginning, if you were Alpha and Omega like he is, then predestination becomes the most sensible way to order the court. And does that mean he creates people to go to hell? I don't think so. I know he creates vessels to honor, and some to honor and some to dishonor. But even when Paul says that, what he says next is, now live a pure life so your vessel can be good. And the door is always open for every man to be in the army of the Lord and to be chosen. And there's a medal that comes to the Christian as he hears the call and he says, yes, Lord, and his heart is empty out and God fills him with his Spirit and he walks in newness of life and there is grace, that's the New Testament term, that is poured into it. It's favoritism, it's chosen, and he gets a medal to carry on his chest. This one is chosen. This one is my favorite. He listens on me, he follows me, he is mine. I will never leave him or forsake him. There's the second medal. And in the army of the Lamb, these people walk around and they have these medals. They also have the medal of being faithful, or it just says here that they're faithful. And I find this is the one that actually arrested my attention in the reading of the verse the first time. I don't know if you ever thought about this or not, but it is impossible to ascertain or to ascribe faithfulness until the end of the story. We can sing all the songs in your hymn book of, Lord, I would be true, I want to be faithful, but you ain't. You can sing till it's bedtime, and you can sing when you get up tomorrow, but you got some other things to do tomorrow if you will have the badge. You see, faithful only comes when you count the talents, when the Lord, who has gone along on a long trip, and he comes back and he sits down with the people and he says, I gave you 5 talents. I'm talking about Matthew 25 now, the parable of the talents. I gave you 5 talents. What did you do? Well, here's your 5 talents, Lord, but I was working and there's 5 more. Really? Well done, good and faithful servant. And the medal, there he gets the medal. He's done. And then you bring the next man in. And he says, see, I gave you 2 talents, didn't I? Yeah, here they are. While you were gone, I actually made 2 more. You made 2 more. Well done, good and faithful servant. And he gets a medal. But after a while, a man comes in and he says, I gave you a talent. Yeah, it's right here. And it doesn't say this in the Bible, but I could just about hear, well, where's the rest? Well, I knew you were a hard man and I knew you don't, so I just took it and I buried it in the ground so nothing would happen to it. Oh, you rascal. You could have at least taken it to the bank and got interest, and I would have gotten that. And he didn't get a medal. See, the story is told at the end. And so what ends up happening is that there was a span of time between the Lord going away and the Lord coming back that every man got up in the morning. And if life was normal in that story, which it probably was, I would guess that one of those mornings that the five-talent man got up, he had kind of a attacking cough, and he didn't know where it come from. Or he had a headache, or his back hurt. Or he was kind of discouraged because he had worked all day yesterday, and he had sort of lost a good bit of a half-talent. That would be normal. That would be everyday living. It's a fallen world. But that did not end the story for the five-talent man or the two-talent man. The evidence is that they got busy anyway, and back to work they went, whatever that work was. And there was a day after day after day, and there were good days, and there were bad days, and there were nothing days, and then there was extra good days, and then there was extra bad days, and there was extra nothing days, and then there was more good days, and one day the Lord came back, and there was 10 stacked there. And it comes from being faithful. And you know, as you read through the New Testament, particularly the epistles now I'm thinking about, actually, there's a story in the Old Testament I found, in Nehemiah, that Nehemiah chapter 7, maybe about verse 2, it says that I needed a keeper of the temple, and I got Hananiah, my brother-in-law, who was a faithful man in the temple, and he made him the captain over this. And what happened is that you have this man that was sitting around, and he didn't have anything to do. No, I'm reading the story wrong. He was actually over here in the temple doing his thing, and by Nehemiah's appreciation, he was doing it well. And he said, I got another one for you here. And this is the story of the faithful man. In Colossians 1, it's a runaway slave named Onesimus. And he says, I'm going to send Onesimus over there to talk to you because he's a faithful man. And this is the story of being in the army of the Lamb. And that is, you work and you work and you work, and then they pick you to work even more. But it's okay, because this is how you get the third medal. And trust me, when Revelation 17 happens, you will want all three medals. There will be no struggle. There will be no exhaustion. There will be no frustration that equalizes or justifies being a two-medal man when the army of the Lamb is going up against the 10 kings. And I don't know where I'll fit into all that. I don't know if I'll be used or if there'll be special warriors coming. But I'm just telling you that one day this is all going to be over. And it's going to be the three-talent followers of the Lamb that stand with him. And what we take away from that today is that it is our call to this faithfulness. And everybody, I believe, pretty well everybody is called. And many are chosen. But there is potential for a two-medal person to yet fail and never get the third one. And it happens. It's happening in plain churches right now. So I was working on my notes this afternoon, a conversation came back to me from just a few weeks ago. It was this fall, I believe. Martin's is starting a new software program for their lab testing where you take a bottle of water and you take your smartphone and you scan it right in, and it puts all the information into this page and it uploads to the lab and they add notes to it and it gets uploaded to the state and it's all digital and it's really neat, except it doesn't always work and there's frustrations that come in. So one day they sent a man out that I didn't know from Adam, never heard of him before, but he works for Martin's and he's in the computer department and he's going to ride with us. Well, as I rode around the countryside in Blair County and Bedford County, we actually ended up clear out at Somerset. So we did some riding that day, and we'd work on these jobs, and in between jobs, we'd sit in the van and talk. I would drive, and it was not a little while that we were going. He said, am I correct that you're an ordained man in your church? I said, that's right. He said, well, what's your position? I said, the one nobody else wants, bishop. And he said, oh, I know what that's like. I said, what, are you ordained? Yeah, he said, until Saturday. I said, what do you mean? Oh, it's a long story, but I guess we have time. This man was an overseer, as they call him in BMA, and he was being relieved of his duties. This was Monday, and this was on Saturday. They were going to be releasing him. And he said, the problem is that the congregation voted to accept some very strange doctrine on the doctrine of heaven and hell. It's a strange doctrine that says only the people that go to heaven live forever. Everybody else is going to just burn up and disappear. And he said, I finally told the congregation that they need to either reject this doctrine or I will resign. And he said, they beat me to the punch. They're dismissing me on Saturday. They'd rather have the doctrine than have me for their bishop, their overseer. I said, well, I guess you're going to be a free man. He said, no, there's still four other churches I take care of. He said, BMA has a really big problem right now. He said, I have a question for you. He said, when you try to have ordinations, do you have people just cutting and running? Not a whole lot. Oh, he said, it's a terrible problem in our church. He said, he thinks in the last 2 years, they have not been able to carry through at least four ordinations in their church because everybody bailed on him. And I was thinking about this little medal that is given to the soldiers of the Lamb. And I'm wondering how this all works out. When a call would come through the church and the soldier says, no, I won't. What happens next? I don't really know the answer to that because I can't see completely behind the scenes to know what really happens. But, you know, this is something that has gone on not just when it comes to ordination. One of the first scraps. That might be too strong. Well, it was kind of strong. After I was ordained deacon, 26 years old, the Sunday school superintendents made new lists and of teachers, and they appointed a sister to teach in one of the classes, and she came back to the superintendents and said, I won't. I don't do that. And they were like, what do you mean you don't do that? I don't. I never have, and I never will. I am not a Sunday school teacher. I will do other things, but don't make me be a Sunday school teacher. So they called the deacon and said, you're supposed to settle when differences arise and that kind of thing. And so I went to talk with her, and I got an earful that she has been here for many years, and nobody has ever asked her to teach, and she ain't doing it. Now, I've lived long enough to know that there's a reaping that goes with that. It goes a lot of different ways, but when I look at either the church or at heaven and say, you know, I don't know how healthy it is to read tales out of the armies of the world, but there is something that goes on in the temporal warfare that I yearn to see duplicated in the church. And maybe that's all backwards. But you see this in particularly in the world wars. Just finished a story now about World War II and some of the it was actually real life stories of people. And this one man named Gerald, he was a boy. He was 18 when World War II broke out. And he had a girlfriend, and it was not an easy relationship because they were madly in love, but her mom despised him and left it be known. And she tried everything she could to break that relationship up. And finally, it got to the place where she agreed that she would just shut up. She wasn't going to bless them getting married, but she would just stop being a pain in the relationship. The next day, war broke out, and the call went out for young men to go and serve their country. And that night, Gerald went over to his fiance's house and he said, I really, really want to get married to you. But somebody's calling and I think I must go. And so they cried together, and he gave her a hug, and he walked off. And he went to serve in the Pacific Theater. I'm not even done listening to the story yet, and it's going to be hard. He, obviously, if the book's written about him, he's going to live through it. But he got to the one-year mark when the soldiers were allowed to go home and say they've done their duty. And he went to his superiors and said, the need is still here. I will yet serve. My marriage can wait. Okay. Now, this is a carnal warfare. Okay. Let's don't get mixed up. I'm just asking us if we can see the struggle for faithfulness to lay such a claim on our life in the kingdom of heaven. That's what I want you to think about. Could you really let heaven pull so hard that it would go right down into your most intense relationship and say, I've got to relax because the kingdom is calling. I've got to back up. Put that thing on hold. It's terribly high calling, but I've lived long enough now to know that he who tries to serve two gods will either get confused or just give up. It has to be all or nothing when it comes to the army of the Lord. And the price can feel high, at least it has for me sometimes. But yet, how do you get that medal on the last day of review? How does it work? Well, I think you know the answer. It goes by, just like the five-talent man, getting back up off his feet after a bad day and said, we're going to look for another talent. And it's the same in the kingdom of heaven. May that speak to us, and may we consider just how many medals we have and how many medals we are in line for as we live for Jesus and stay in the kingdom of heaven. God bless you.